Chapter 5. Unaware of the events unfolding more than 200 feet above his head, Captain Peterson lay in his bunk and stared into the darkness, wondering whether he would freeze to death or suffocate first from lack of oxygen. It was purely an intellectual exercise. He was beyond caring how the end came. He only hoped that it arrived soon. The cold had drained most of his energy. Every labored breath of carbon dioxide he and his crew exhaled made the air less able to sustain life. The captain was drifting off into the comatose state that comes when the will to live ebbs like the lowering tide. Even thoughts of his wife and children could not pull him back. He longed to reach the numb stage that might cushion his aches and pains. His body still harbored enough life to sustain his misery. His tortured lungs launched into a coughing fit that triggered a throbbing in his left arm, broken when he'd been thrown against a bulkhead. It was a simple fracture, but it hurt like hell. The groans of his crewmen reminded Peterson that he was not alone in his discomfort. As he had a dozen times already, the captain ran through the collision in his mind and wondered if he could have avoided it. All had been going well. A dangerous confrontation had been avoided, and the Sea Sentinel was being escorted out to sea. Then, without warning, that crazy circus-painted ship had veered toward the cruiser's exposed side. His frantic order to bear off had come too late. The tortured sound of tearing steel told him that the wound was fatal. His naval training had quickly come into play. He'd given the order to abandon ship and was supervising the launch of the lifeboats when a sailor ran up and said men were injured below decks. Peterson hadn't hesitated. He'd left the lifeboat launch in the hands of his first mate and hurried to aid his men. The night watch had been asleep when the Leif Erikson was hit. The Sea Sentinel's bow had penetrated the hull behind the sleeping quarters, sparing the crew from instant death, but injuring some men. Peterson dashed into the mess hall, then half tumbled down the companionway and saw that the uninjured were tending to their comrades. "Abandon ship," he ordered. "Form human stretchers." The ship was sinking at a stern down angle from the weight of the sea that poured in through the gaping hole. Water flowed into the mess hall, then down through the open hatch into the bunk room, cutting off escape. Peterson climbed partway up the ladder, slammed the hatch shut, and spun the wheel that locked it tight. Then the ship lurched as he was descending, and he slammed against the bulkhead, losing consciousness. It was a fortunate accident because he didn't hear the horrible moans and creaks the ship made on its fatal plunge to the bottom. And his limp body wasn't further injured when, moments later, the cruiser slammed into the soft mud. Even so, when the captain awoke in the darkened cabin, it was to an even more terrible sound, the cries of his men. Soon after he regained consciousness, a beam of light had stabbed the darkness and revealed bloodied and pale faces among the jumbled bunks and sea chests. The ship's chef, a short, round man named Lars, called the captain's name.
"Over here," Peterson croaked.
The flickering light came his way. Lars crawled up beside Peterson, holding an electric torch.
"Are you all right, Lars?" the captain asked.
"Some bumps and bruises. My fet protected me.
How about you, sir?"
Peterson managed a wet laugh.
"I'm not so lucky. Broken left arm."
"What happened, Captain? I was sleeping."
"A ship slammed into us."
"Damn," Lars said.
"I was having a sweet dream of good things to eat before I got tossed from my bunk. Didn't expect to see you down here, sir."
"One of the crew said you were in trouble.
I came to help."
He struggled to get up.
"I'm not much help sitting here. Can you give me a hand?"
They fashioned an improvised sling from the captain's belt and went around the cabin. With the help of a few men who hadn't been severely injured, they tried to make those less fortunate comfortable. The damp, biting cold was the worst immediate danger. They might be able to buy time, Peterson thought. The bunk room had a supply of immersion suits used for cold water protection if the ship went down. It took a while to round up the suits, which were scattered throughout the cabin in bags, and to get the injured men into them. They slipped on their gloves and pulled down the hoods. Then they rounded up spare blankets and clothes and wrapped themselves in several layers. With the cold temporarily held at bay, Peterson turned his efforts to the air problem. One of the aluminum lockers held breathing devices to be used in case of fire or other emergency. These were passed around. They, too, would buy time. Peterson decided to use up their canned air first because it was purer than the air in the cabin, which was making the men sick. Peterson formed tapping crews for the same reason POW officers allocated duties to maintain morale. The men took turns using a wrench to wrap SOS on the hull. As one man after another tired of the job, Peterson continued to tap away, although he wasn't sure why. Bored with the SOS, he began tapping out messages describing their plight. Eventually, he tired and rapped the bulkhead whenever strength allowed, which wasn't often. Then he stopped altogether. His thoughts turned from rescue. He shut his eyes, and once more, he began to think of death. Using the marker buoy line as his guide, Austin sank into the depths feet first and slightly angled forward, like an old hardhat diver being lowered at the end of an invisible air hose. Dancing rainbow shafts lanced the water like sunlight streaming through stained glass windows. As Austin plunged deeper, the water filtered out the colors and the twilight abruptly turned into a violet night. The powerful halogen lights mounted on the front of the hard suit caught snowy motes of marine vegetation and nervous schools of fish in their beams. But before long, Austin was dropping into the benthic levels where only the hardiest of fish lived. At 200 feet, his lights picked out the cruiser's masts and antennas. Then the ship's ghostly contours materialized. Austin hit the vertical thrusters and slowed to a stop at deck level. Then the horizontal thrusters whirred and he cruised along the hull, rounded the stern, and came back to the bow. The ship lay as shown in the sonar picture, at a slight angle on the slope, with the bow higher than the stern. He studied the ship with the intensity of a medical examiner inspecting the autopsied body of a murder victim, paying particular attention to the triangular gash in the side. No vessel could have survived the giant bayonet wound. Seeing only twisted metal beyond the jagged opening, he moved toward the bow again. He approached within inches of the hull, feeling as dwarfed as a fly on a wall, leaned his helmet against the steel plating, and listened. The only sounds were the hollow noise of his breathing and the whir of thrusters as they kept the suit at a hover. Austin pushed off several feet, came around, goosed the horizontal thrusters, and let his metal knees slam into the ship. On the other side of the hull, Peterson's half-closed eyes blinked fully open. He held his breath. "What was that?" a hoarse voice said in the darkness. Lars had been huddled on the bunk next to the captain's. "Thank God you heard it too," Peterson whispered. "I thought I was going mad. Listen." They strained their ears and heard tapping on the outside of the hull. Morse code. Slow and measured, as if the sender were struggling with each letter. The captain's eyes widened like those of a cartoon character as he translated the rough taps into letters. P-E-T-E. Austin was cursing the awkwardness of communicating. At his direction, one of the crew had attached a specially adapted ball-peen hammer to his right-hand manipulator. The mechanical arm moved with agonizing slowness, but by concentrating all his resources, he finished tapping out one word in Morse code. E-R-S-E-N. He stopped and put his helmet against the hull. After a moment, he heard dots and dashes clunked out in reply.
Yes.
Status.
Air bad. Cold.
Help. Soon.
A pause, then hurry.
Soon. Peterson called out to his men that rescue was imminent. He felt guilty lying. Their time was about to run out. He was having a problem focusing. It was getting harder to breathe, and soon it would be impossible. The temperature had plunged to below zero, and even the immersion suit couldn't keep out the cold. He had stopped shivering, the first sign of hypothermia. Lars interrupted Peterson's drifting thoughts.
Captain, can I ask you a question?
Peterson grunted in the affirmative.
Why the hell did you come back, sir? You could have saved yourself.
Peterson said, I heard somewhere a captain is supposed to go down with his ship.
This is about as far down as you can go, Captain.
Peterson made a gargling sound that was as close to laughter as he could muster. Lars did the same, but their strength soon left them. They made themselves as comfortable as they could and waited.